Good evening, Dan. Welcome to the Space Show.
Well, thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Okay, well, let's take us through the overall Kistler concept. You're obviously trying to get cheap access to space. How are you going to achieve that?
Well, you achieve cheap access to space by two things. You have a reusable launch vehicle, so you don't throw it away each time and have to build a new vehicle each time. And then you work very diligently at keeping the operating costs low, so you don't spend a lot of money getting it ready to launch. And with those two primary approaches, we believe we can launch a payload into space for about half the price that it takes to launch it on an expendable vehicle. The basic concept of the vehicle is it's a two-stage vehicle. It launches vertically. About 2 minutes into the flight, the first and second stage separate. We restart the first stage and fly it back to the launch site and land it using parachutes and airbags. Meanwhile, the second stage continues on up in the, its engine starts and it continues on up in the orbit. We deploy the payload at the customer's desired point in space, and then we do a deorbit burn and fly the second stage back and land it right near the launch site, also once again using parachutes and airbags.
Are the technologies to do this in hand, or are they new technologies?
No, the technologies we've used are all in hand, and once again, that was one of our key goals, was not to develop a research and development vehicle, but to use technologies that were established and proven, and basically we're just packaging them slightly different to achieve the reusable launch vehicle.
You used the largest parachute array recently.
That's correct. The company we have has been doing parachutes for a long time. They did the parachutes for Apollo. They have the drag chute and the solid rocket booster recovery chutes on the shuttle. So the technology is essentially there. We've gone somewhat larger than they have, but our tests have worked very well.
And airbag technology, is that much the same as used in motor cars or in the Mars Pathfinder landing?
Across, a little bit of each. Once again, Irvin Aerospace that do our parachutes also do our airbags. And they have some experience on other Department of Defense programs with airbags. So it's a well-established technology.
The rocket vehicles I've seen are pretty fragile. The skin of the fuel tanks and so on is very, very thin. How are you going to get your vehicles to survive the re-entry, the landing, basically?
Well, we built them more robust, and obviously it costs you a little bit in payload performance, but it makes it reusable. And through the use of composites, you can build a pretty hardy vehicle. And keep it quite light using state-of-the-art composites. And Northrop Grumman, who built the B-2, which is essentially a composite airplane, is our contractor to build the structure for our vehicle. And a large portion of the first vehicle is already completed, and it looks very well, good.
And you're not recovering just the first stage. You're also recovering the stage that goes into orbit and deploys a satellite. How's that going to be achieved?
That's correct. We're bringing the whole thing back. And basically what we do is we get on orbit and we open the payload compartment and we deploy the satellites. And then we close it back up. And it has a thermal protection system. Some of it is ultimately we want to get it to be like the shuttle with tiles and blankets. The first test vehicle, we're using some ablator on the real high heating areas. That's a insulating coating that essentially chars off as it re-enters. But we basically fly the vehicle back, guide it to a point above the landing site, and then deploy the parachutes and then deploy the airbags for a landing.
Obviously, you perhaps have a certain uncertainty in where these things are going to land. You need a pretty large landing area. Is that why you've chosen Australia?
Well, that certainly the very flat, large area at Woomera is a key reason that we've chosen to fly our flights out of Australia. However, we do plan to have relatively good accuracy within a couple kilometers of our target, our aim point. And as we fly it more and gain experience, we think we can bring that error margin down even less. But for the first several tests, we're expecting to have a bit of scatter in our landings.
Okay. And the first few tests are from Australia, but you're also going to have another launch site, aren't you?
Right. Our long-range plans are to have two launch sites. We're built the first launch site in Australia, where we'll do our test flights and then move into our commercial flights as soon as we're done with the test flights. At the point when the business grows to the point where we need a second launch site, we have arrangements in Nevada and the U.S., and we will be building a launch site there, and then we can basically cover the whole world. The customers from the Pacific Rim would be you know, key candidates for the Australian site. The customers from the U.S. would probably be key candidates for the Nevada site. But the whole decision on that is pretty much market driven. It depends on when we have enough business that it makes sense to build a second launch site.
What sort of payloads are you looking for? Low Earth orbit or geostationary?
No, this our vehicle is designed specifically to put satellites into low Earth orbit. Somewhere in the future, conceivably, with a kick stage or a booster onto the payload, we could get out of low Earth orbit. But our focus right now are the very large number of communication satellites that are targeted to be launched into low Earth orbit.
And you can launch into a nearly polar orbit, can you, from Woomera?
Well, we can launch into a polar orbit. In fact, we can launch beyond a polar orbit, something called sun synchronous, so we can cover the Earth observation-type satellites as well as the communication satellites.
And what sort of payload are we looking at into orbit?
We're looking at 10,000 pounds to a due east launch. It's kind of a standardized way the industry accepts or normalizes all of the different payloads. As you launch to higher altitudes and higher inclinations, then obviously your payload performance goes down. But to give you some numbers of satellites that are out there, we can carry two Iridium to the altitude and orbit they like to go to. We can carry three Global Stars to the orbit that they're interested in going to. So that kind of gives you a sense of the size and capability that we have.
And how's progress going on developing the launch site at Woomera? You've had to negotiate with the local people.
It's gone very well. The support we've gotten in Australia has been just fantastic, from the very highest levels in the Commonwealth all the way down through the state and local governments. So it's gone very well. We've essentially all of the agreements signed that we need signed, and the only thing holding us up a little bit right now is getting the permission from the U.S. State Department to transfer our drawings over here so they can be built by a local contractor.
I've heard that a number of other companies are having technology transfer problems to other countries. I didn't realize Australia was one of those.
Oh, everybody is subject to that, and it's kind of amazing the amount of bureaucracy associated with it. But it's you know, one of the things you have to deal with, and we've worked through it, and I think we've worked through it very well, and we're very close to being able to get the construction started.
Is the launch base going to be constructed by Americans or Australians, and what about the employment after that, operating the base?
Yeah. The construction is being done by a local contractor, Leighton, out of Melbourne. There, the general contractor will be building all the facilities. They're designing some of the facilities that aren't, quote, sensitive to our State Department, and then the others, we have the plans designed in the U.S., and they'll be shipped over, and Leighton will also be building that. Then we also will be using BOC gas for some of the tankage, and they'll be supplying us with the propellants and liquid oxygen that we need for the vehicle. There are, and, you know, through the construction, there's going to be a lot of work that will be done by the Australians. Then when we start operations, as operations pick up, the number of people we will need will grow. Once again, the part that makes this commercially feasible is to try and maintain as small a workforce as possible, but a very large percentage of it will be Australian. And as the flight rate grows, that number will get bigger, And it's not hard to imagine other spin-offs that if we're launching a lot of Pacific Rim satellites, that conceivably some of the construction of the satellites will come to Australian companies, or maybe new factories will be built to build the satellites near the Woomera site.
If any Australian companies listening and they want to get involved in this, how do they get in contact with you?
Well, Don Fagan is the head of our Australian operations, and he has an office in Woomera. So he's fully in charge of pulling everything together and getting the site ready. So he would be the person to for them to contact.
Do you have any contracts yet on launching?
Yes, we have 10 contracts with Space Systems Loral. To launch starting the fourth quarter of next year. And we are talking to a lot of other customers, but currently at this time I'm not at liberty to talk about where we stand with them.
Well, I hope, Dan, that everything goes all right and that just transfer from being a NASA astronaut to operating with one of the world's most revolutionary launch systems is worth your while.
Well, I'm enjoying it so far, and I really appreciate the opportunity to talk with you. Thanks a lot.
Thank you very much.